I'm Dan Olson. The title of this session is In Dialogue with African Traditional Religions and Cultures. The second in this series, subtitled Health. As we began this series yesterday, we talked about the title African Traditional Religions and Cultures, and tried to emphasize that the fact of traditional religions in the continent are tied in totally with the culture, with the relationships, with the interaction of people, that it is always a very community-based religion. The individualism or the private belief or faith system is really not part of the traditional African way of thinking or acting in a religious way, or in any other way for that matter, a very communal kind of life. And we use the acrostic AFTRAC to shorten up our title so that we try to remember to keep those concepts always together of religion and culture. Today's topic is health. And it is impossible in African traditional faith to conceive of religion outside of or apart from a concern for health or a concern for medicine. Because one of the primary functions, one of the primary ways of operating of traditional African faiths is to deal with disease, to deal with ill health of all of its kinds of manifestations. And almost all of the practices of the interrelation are there between their understanding of the high God or of the spirits or of the divinities or of the powers of sorcerers or witches or healers is related to disease and to health and to medicine in one form or another. So we really can't conceive of talking about African traditional religions without talking about health as the very center of that faith or of those faiths, since we're talking really about many belief systems. And so when Christian missions came into the continent a century or so ago, the fact that Christian missions came with healing in the form of Western medicine, of training, of nurses, of midwives, of bringing in Western medicine of one form or another as being together with the education and the church fit very well, because to see people coming as religious people who were also healers was very natural. It wasn't always natural for them to see how the healing took place, but we'll get into some of that later. There was a difference between penicillin and fetishes, for example, that aroused some conflict in many parts of the African continent. When Western medicine came, there were places where it was incorporated into the traditional ways very well, and there were ways in which that Western medicine, scientific medicine, corrected some errors and added to the positive forces that were already prevalent in those places. When we think of medicine here, we think in terms of various specialties and specialists. We think of internists and cardiologists and orthopedic surgeons and psychiatrists. Medicine has a wide variety of specialties within it, and in its own way, African traditional healers, would have a lot of specialists as well, that there would be various kinds of spiritual healers, people called shamans or wise people. There would be sorcerers and witches on the negative side. There would be herbalists who would have a well-defined practice of using various herbs and barks and oils and fats and various natural products for healing. So there were, there was and is a diversity of kinds of healers in the traditional African way as well. As missionaries came and proclaimed Christ as victor, it was one aspect that was readily adopted by African people, because he was in his spirit victor over the forces that kept them down, kept them ill, kept them away from the natural whole life that they believed God intended for his creation, and saw in Christ one who was also victor over disease. And so there were many linkages where the movement into Christianity became very understandable, very natural, and very free-flowing, and hence the rapid rise of the numbers of Christians from something like 4 million to over 100 million in about three quarters of a century. A fantastic growth rate, and it seems to fit in many ways with traditional faith. A lot of what I want to say today is related to one tribe in West Africa, the Akan or the Ashanti people of Ghana, formerly called the Gold Coast in colonial days, and try to focus in some specific way on those people, and some of the things about it is would be general and would apply to many other tribes in Africa as well. It's a very interesting nation or tribe in that, for many respects, one of them, to me, that's interesting is that inheritance is matriarchal in that tribe, and the worldly goods or wealth is handed down on the mother's side, and as children come, they become part of the mother's family. And so the most important male in your life as a young person is your mother's brother or your uncle. So having a rich uncle in the Ashanti society is very real. And you would live with your mother rather than with your father, and you become part of that family much more than in a nuclear kind of family. We would see father and mother and children together. An extended family would move in that society more on the mother's side. That's kind of an aside, but one thing that I think is very interesting to see, that kind of matriarchal emphasis. In that society, as in most of Africa, disease is not natural. In other words, to put it another way, for them, disease is evil. The death of old persons in ripe old age, having lived a life and having descendants, to make sure that there's somebody who is going to venerate them and honor them after they've died, is somewhat accepted as natural. But the illness of the young, the sudden death of people before old age, is a sign that there is something wrong in relationships. The first question, as we've said before in some of these sessions, I don't know if you've been here, is that when someone becomes ill, the first question that is asked is what is wrong in relationships? Who have you wronged, or who has wronged you? where is there a brokenness in relationships that has caused this illness, either between yourselves and other people, or between yourselves and divinities or gods or ancestral spirits. Somewhere something is broken to have caused the illness, because the illness is not natural, it is evil, and a sign that something has been broken in relationships. And therefore illness prompts the question, what's wrong? Not what's wrong in the body of the person that's ill, but what's wrong in the total community structure and relationships, either with that person. If someone is born with an illness, then obviously it is something having to do with the parents or the grandparents or the ancestors. In some way, there is a giving forth of something, some illness as a result of wrong. It could also be a symptom of somebody that has something against you, who is using powers against you to create illness. And so some distinctions are made in disease in many, many societies, as we mentioned, some from birth, which are a result of ancestors. There are certain diseases that have always been called unclean, and others that don't really have a name but are simply put in other, or they're not clean. All disease is unclean, but some that are more precisely unclean, like epilepsy or leprosy or various forms of insanity or mental retardation, or diseases that have within them a distinct symptoms that separate you from the rest of society, that there are certain kinds of uncleanness that have caused those illnesses. Recently visited a home for retarded children in Tanzania, and it's the first such institution to care for retarded children in that whole country. It's small, it'll hold about 25 people, and up till now there's been the hiding of such people. They've always been cared for. People are never left alone, but there's a certain amount of hiding and shame involved, in loss of face of having such a person in your family. There are a lot of things that must be said about the spiritual aspects of sickness. Sickness is never conceived in African terms as being purely physical. There is always a spiritual aspect, and one of the writers on the subject has defined the spiritual forces of the human being, that somewhere at the apex of this triangle is the high God, and below are many kinds of mysterious and sometimes evil magical powers. The other side of the one side of the triangle are the ancestral spirits. And on the other side, various kinds of spirits of nature, or natural spirits. And a person living within this kind of situation, there are always pressures from these three sides, from the magical powers, from the natural spirits, the ancestral spirits, which are playing upon our life. The high God is there, but not directly related to the day-to-day living of persons' lives. But all these other powers are certainly there. And they have to do with the increase or the decrease of our health, as to how powerful, how forceful, how much there is within our own personal spiritual power to offset the forces of these spirits. I think if we can kind of think into living that way, how it would feel. You know, I think we feel sort of this way anyway. I think there's some of that in us, in all people, where we ask some of the same questions and come at things in somewhat the same way. And you know, I think of ancestral spirits. I don't know how many of you have been involved in transactional analysis, or the I'm okay, you're okay thing, where there's parent, adult, child within each of us. And the parent part of us are all of those tapes that are running, all of those messages of should and should not, and all the parental stuff that continues to play. Well, I mean, we've taken a technological modern way of dealing with it, calling it a tape, and a tape player or computer or whatever that's playing on us. And those words and those messages that continue to come from us, from our ancestors, our training, our background, and customs, traditions, you know, that's not a whole lot different from talking about the force of ancestral spirits. Somewhat different, maybe, but I think there's some similarity. And I think it's those kind of linkages that we can see some indication of how these forces are there either to impinge on our good health or our ill health. God is there, but in most traditional African religions and cultures, there are no temples or priests to God. There are temples and priests and holy people, shamans and others that are in relation to the intermediaries between God, the intermediary spirits, but not to God as the high God. And we talked yesterday about how it is difficult for the African to conceive of a God who is also God of the enemy, because God is the one that gives power and health and wholeness and healing to us, to our people, to our language group, our nation. I think we can relate to that too from our American way of thinking. There are some forms of behavior, apparently, that God really abhors. And people usually turn to looking at epidemics that reach across many nations as somehow being the intervention of the high God, that somehow behavior of people has been so abhorrent that the result is this epidemic which not only reaches our people or our clan or our family or an individual, but has reached, you know, vast numbers of people across which people have relationships. But in the main, the temples and the priests and traditional religions are to divinities. The powers that kind of go in the hierarchy between God and humans. In some senses, as traditional Roman Catholics have come to Africa, they've found a real linkage in the veneration of saints. That there are people who have gone before, who are the holy people of God, to whom we can have a relationship of some kind, and the linkage between the veneration of saints as they practice it in their devotional life is a linkage with what many traditional African faiths have seen as the divinities, spiritual powers, which are the agents of God. And quite often they are negative. They're not always negative, but they're quite negative. For some reason, the divinities are not out for our good, but they're usually looked at when something is wrong, like illness. And you know, I think we do some of the same thing. When things are going good, we say, you know, we're happy that God has given us talent so that I've created such a good life for myself. And when things go wrong, God, why have you done this to me? And we're not so quick to say, God, why have you given this good life to me? Or if we do, we're a little afraid to say thanks for fear that something negative might happen. I'm having such a good time, something must really be wrong around the corner. And that concept of the divinity is strong in Africa. And in a sense, therefore, the divinity needs appeasement by various kinds of keeping laws, observing taboos, to make sure that the divinities are appeased. People become ill if they are a follower of a divinity, a particular god in a small g, if we want to use that term, some god of nature or however else the god is expressed. If that follower of that divinity is disobedient or fails to keep the laws, the shoulds and the should nots, the taboos that god has determined, or a person can become ill as a result of that divinity or that god. If I am a follower of a divinity and you have done something evil to me or to my family, you may be struck by my divinity in retaliation for the illness or for the bad action that you have done to a follower of a certain divinity. So the divinities get into the action either by causing illness to the disobedience of his followers, or to the oppressive action of those who are oppressing followers of the divinity. There are also ways in which illness is caused by failure to keep oaths made in the name of a divinity. If you make an oath in the name of and fail to keep the oath, and recognizing again what we said in the introduction that all of these cultures are oral in essence. They become literate as literacy training and so on has come, but basically they have been oral, and so the word spoken is as binding or more binding in many cases as we would consider a written signature notarized on a contract. They've had too much experience, as have the American Native Indians in this country, with how much written oaths mean, or how little they mean, when it comes right down to certain economic political decisions, and that has happened in Africa as well with colonial powers. But the spoken oath in the name of a divinity, if it is broken, is cause for tremendous fear, and often cause of illness. Along with the divinities, as part of this hierarchy of spiritual powers, are the ancestral spirits. We've mentioned some things about them now in this time. The division between spirit and material, or spirit and body, is not a precise separation. What is spirit and what is body? We make this dichotomy or this dualism very neat. There are things that are spiritual, there are things that are material, and we get all hung up in our practice of Christianity as well. You know, some things are evangelism, some things are social action, and never the twain shall meet, which is an inappropriate distinction. Their conception of material and spiritual, you know, really blends. In the same way, the separation between life and death is not so neatly defined. That there is a sense in which those who have died remain the living dead, as some writers have called them. The living dead are our ancestors whose spirit is still present, who still needs to be appeased, and will be present within the village or the family as long as there is somebody living who remembers the person while he was in the body. And the fruitfulness of life, the fruitfulness of crops, of having children, of good health, of good relationships, depends on the force of the ancestors. So you must make sure that your ancestors are venerated and appeased, and there are certain ceremonies and rituals that are carried out of the pouring of certain liquids, of planting of flowers, of that sounds familiar, and putting food offerings on the grave, and all kinds of things that are done to make this appeasement in order to ensure the happy or the positive influence of the ancestors' spirits on the ongoing life. And if you don't do that, the anger will come, and disease will come, and misfortune, and bad crops, and all kinds of things. So these people really are the living dead. They are gone in one sense, but they are still very much present. As long as anyone there who calls them by name, who remembers them in person. I've been at places in West Africa where particularly the chief or the elder, the grandfather type figure of the village is buried in a very obvious place in the village, and quite often it's on the porch of a house where, you know, like in the front porch, there will be a kind of a concrete or rock type crypt that's right there. And that person is buried. I mean, every time you go in and out of the house, you're right there in the cemetery. And there's a cup or a bowl there that's placed where you regularly put flowers, you regularly put food. The person is regularly kept in mind of the people, and kids climbing on it and playing over it, but it's there as a constant reminder that person is part of the living dead, the ancestral spirits that pervade the village and life. It would be important then to have children, not only important but essential, to remember and venerate the grandfather or the grandmother. And if you don't, then you're bringing down upon yourself and everyone else in the village ill health and disaster. So having children is not simply a nice thing to do, but it's essential for the welfare of the village and welfare of the health of the village and even your own immortality. To make sure that you have children to maintain the veneration of the ancestors. And therefore you can't sell the land of the ancestor. We read in South Africa, for example, about the South African government removing people from their traditional lands and moving them to places that are now designated black lands, which we look at as a civil rights issue, of people arbitrarily being moved from their homes, but it's also very strongly a religious issue. You're moving people from the place where their ancestors are buried, and it's like ripping something out of you to be moved to another spot of land and leaving that burial area and having it bulldozed over and a shopping center put in for someone. That's at the very core a religious issue for traditional African people as much as what we would call a human rights issue. When these ancestral spirits are annoyed, there's usually punishment. The punishment usually comes only to the living relatives, but by extension, if it comes to crops or whatever, it extends to others as well. There are places where there are shrines to ancestors and large grave markers and places where prayers are said, and we could say in concluding of this much of the section of talking about God and the divinities and ancestral spirits, that health is present when one is at peace with God and the divinities and the ancestral spirits. Then there is health. When that being at peace or at shalom, in right relationships with those spiritual powers, then illness occurs. So we look at some of the negative forces of this spiritual power. We can look at people often called sorcerers. They are usually people looked at as being evil. And they would use tangible objects, some kind of fetish or charm, which would have a physical result in somebody else's life. You could use a sorcerer to bring about evil to somebody else, and use the power. And there's been a lot of evidences that these people make good financial gain out of their sometimes real and sometimes imagined psychical power to create effect upon other people. Various kinds of rituals. You would eat bread. The sorcerer would eat bread, and mentioning the person's name, along with certain incantations, and the people eating that bread would die of poisoning. And it's hard to explain some of those things that people have seen happen, whether it becomes, as we have usually done, said it's a case of extreme auto-suggestion or whatever psychical powers that we aren't yet aware of. But to see the reality of it is quite frightening. And once it's happened, or even stories of it's happening in a village, you can imagine the power that develops in relation to the expressed power of that individual. There are a lot of good healers. They're not all sorcerers, and when we talk about witch doctors, it usually includes all kinds of people of various kinds of specialties within the healing realm. And it's probably an inappropriate term, because it really doesn't mean much except as a pejorative term from our, quote, much better technological, end quote, approach to life. But good healers or good priests in various ways use spiritual power for healing. And they also use various kinds of physical things for healing, such as we've mentioned, herbs and seeds and bark and roots, fats and oils, parts of animals that have been known to have true medicinal properties. And of course, where do a good share of our medicines come? Some of them have been synthetic, but a lot of them are very natural products put together that have been known to have healing properties. And there are study institutes that are going on in various parts of Africa and elsewhere to try to keep and not lose through death and modernization and urbanization and whatnot the wisdom of some of these healers and the healing medicinal things of nature that they've used and incorporate them into modern medical practices. It would be a shame to lose all of this good knowledge. There are also, in addition to sorcerers, on the bad side of the ledger, again, people often called witches, who have usually not working with physical things as sorcerers do, but using strictly psychical powers to have a negative effect on other people. And quite often the power of witches is seen to have only a certain radius. And many people in mission hospitals and other things will talk about people who will travel a great distance to go to receive technological medical treatment to get out of the range of the psychic power of witches, who are in their own village. They'll go to another town or another village where that power doesn't reach. There is within all of this a sense of fate. It is very strong among African people. I often think it comes out most strongly in the way they drive when they get into automobiles, that if God wills there to be another car coming up this hill, it's God's will. Or if I make it around this curve, whatever. Often not known as being the most careful drivers in the world. I think Nairobi is a very modern city, has one of the highest death traffic roll rates in the world. But the sense of fate, either destined by God or destined by some other power, has created this situation within me of ill health, which is simply destiny. I'd like to look for a couple minutes at how, as we've talked about, basically the Ashanti people's view of health and healing and witches and sorcerers and holy people, how they look at the human being. The human being is a composite of many forces. And usually they would look at that composite as being produced by the mother and the father and God. And the mother produces the blood. And they use the term in their language, in the Akan language, of bhagya. And that would mean that all of our physical characteristics are a result of our mother. And to that is added the father's contribution of the personalizing principle, the sunsung in their language, the spirit, that which distinguishes us as personalities and as individuals from each other. And then to that is God, who gives the humanizing force, the soul, the breath of life that creates a being that is different from other parts of the animal kingdom. And so together is this composite of the force of the mother in the physical part of our being, the force of the father in the personality distinguishing characteristics, and God, who gives the kind of humanizing breath of life forces. We could talk about that or how that applies to our way of thinking of what a human is. But in death, the first two are what die, in a sense, and are put into the ground, the physical and the personality characteristics of a father and mother, and what has been given by God, the life force which has animated this being, is what lives on. And I think we can see a lot of similarity to our understanding of, may not always come from Christian teaching, but certainly somewhere in our sense of understanding things, we talk and say the same things. You've heard those kind of things at funerals or when people are trying to comfort you. The strong personality, the one who has not only a strong body from mother, a strong personality development from father's genetic contribution, but also a strength of personality and character of this humanizing force of God, makes it difficult to be bewitched. The way to avoid being bewitched or under the power of these forces is to maintain a strong character. You strengthen your personality, you strengthen your character, you get into some spiritual fitness classes of some kind or another in order to develop that sense of yourself. And that is the most effective way of avoiding the power of these forces on your life, your relational fitness to other people and your spiritual fitness. Therefore, there's a great virtue in goodness, of being a good person, of well-related to other people, of having a wholeness of life. I think we can see a lot of sense of that in our understanding of a holistic medicine. If your relationships are good, if your sense of fulfillment is good, your self-image is good, your relation to God, you have a sustaining faith, if all of these things are in place, you're healthy. And that's very much, in their understanding, is the way of avoiding the influx of negative spiritual powers. The negative power, the negative persons, the sorcerers and the witches, lose their power, and God and the divinities and the ancestors are pleased, and together this creates a positive balance of health. Again, health being defined as being at peace, in right relation, in shalom with God and other people. And so there's always then a correlation between moral evil and physical evil. And I think we can find some similarities in our understanding of our lives as well. Religion, as we've said over and over again, is never private. Religion always, in the traditional sense, has this communal importance. One can look at some of the, just very briefly, some of the faults of the way traditional medicine has been practiced and the way technological medicine has made a contribution. One is that diagnoses are often inaccurate and wrong kinds of treatment or practice is given, or others is not given. Things like dosage, even of those herbal medications, is not always taken into account in a way that could even be more appropriate to healing if they were used better. A lot of the traditional healers, like traditional midwives, have used very unhygienic conditions and things. There are practices like rubbing cow dung on the knife used to cut the umbilical cord, which is to have some positive effect upon the child, and a lot of infections and child mortality result from certain kinds of practices which have been confronted by technological medicine. One of the big faults, I suppose, one could see is that there is among traditional healers very, very little sharing of knowledge. It's kept as a private thing because it is one's livelihood. You don't go around telling other people, because then you are not the one people need to come to. There's this kind of possessiveness of the power. And the sharing comes often by inheritance, or working with, or persons in a special relation to the one who has these gifts. But often a lot of the power and the knowledge is lost, because it goes to the grave with people, and there's not a free sharing. As Christianity has come, there's been a lot of emphasis on healing within churches. And the healing churches in Africa have been a very dynamic force, particularly among those churches called the independent spiritual churches. They all focus upon healing as a very central ingredient of their faith. I think Africans always ask the why question. And I think there's another linkage in our dialogue. We always ask the why question too, in one way or another. We can get an illness and somebody say, well, the illness was caused because of a virus that attacked the nerves of the central nervous system. And somehow that explains the question of how, but the question of why sort of lingers on. And we ask, why me? Why her? Why did this happen? And we're not so far from the Africans in always asking that why question. And Africans often getting a technological answer. Well, your child became ill because they got the hepatitis infection and this and this happened. And they will say, yes, I agree, I understand that. And even have come to some understanding of germs and bacteria and virus and this. But still will say, well, that proves the power of the witches and the sorcerers because the doctor treating her didn't get that. And the other person, the other kids in the village didn't get that. If the virus or the germ were there, the bacteria were there, it would have affected all. Why my child and not the others? And that technological explanation would further prove the power of the witches because it came to this person and not to all of the others. And so the why question is always asked in addition to the technological answers of the how. And I think that's, again, another place of strong linkage in our understanding, because in one way or another, we ask why as well. When particularly tragic things happen. A couple of implications, and then we'll see what discussion we have on this subject. I think one implication, we need to recognize the contribution of these belief systems in understanding that when we deal in health issues, we deal with the human being as a complex being. A being that is at one and the same time moral and religious, social, physical, economic, cultural, all wrapped together as one complex organism. I think a second implication that we might draw is that understanding for many people of this world the recognition of spiritual realities are as real as electricity or radio waves or other kinds of unseen powers are to us. How does that image from some far-off antenna reach my television screen and produce a picture when it's passed only through air? Is a reality that I can't understand, but I know it's there. And in the same way, the spiritual realities of African people, of understanding these things that relate to health are there. And we dehumanize if we only mechanize the human being. And in medical treatment, treat only the body as a kind of a machine. I don't think doctors do that, physicians, surgeons, as much as some have said, done in other times, but simply to treat the human as a body with certain functions that are going wrong. We treat those functions and forget about this whole complex of spirit realities. I think another implication to the African, life is sacred. To create and to continue life is necessary to be human. And life is not taken lightly, or the loss of life. And it has effects, as we've seen, on the necessity of having children. But it also says that life comes out of the world of spirit. It enters the world of earth, and then it returns to the world of spirit. And in that sense, and in that movement, through this part of life, life is seen as sacred. Well, we have some time to talk about this. We'd like to hear your reactions, comments, places where something has struck you.
I have a comment. It seems that throughout history, the literate ability of a society has made it much more easy for a particular society to understand the how of things. And I think Western culture and some of those things are good examples of that, but it has never really helped us understand why. And when you talk about the oral passage of information and that sort of thing, to me it's a kind of an interesting thing. I hadn't really thought about it much until you mentioned it yesterday a little bit. But it has, and I believe that African traditions have been passed down all over. To my knowledge, there is very little literate stuff.
Anybody else want to respond to that comment?
I am from Montana, and I just keep making the jump between the things you're talking about here and the Native American populations that we deal with, the oral population, the magical powers and natural spirits and all of this stuff, the ancestral power spirits. And I guess it strikes me somehow that both of those two groups of people have been fairly open to Christianity, whereas, you know, like the Oriental cultures and things haven't been as much. And I keep wondering what cultural things there make a difference between the Orientals' openness to Christianity and the traditional African or the Native Americans' openness to Christianity. I guess it's a question. Do you know what those things are? Or have you thought about them?
Well, I know that within Africa there is certainly a tremendous openness to Christianity among people of traditional faiths and a lack of openness to Christianity among people who are Muslim, to make one character generalization there. And I have a sense of what you're talking about in terms of Oriental religion, of Buddhism, Hinduism, Taoism, and others, but I don't really know enough of their of those faiths to know why or why not there has not been the same kind of openness. I have often also made the connection with American Native Indian people in this country that a lot of their religious beliefs and tie-ins with nature and spirits and things are very similar. To me, the openness to Christianity has been that these are very spiritual people who see within Christ a spirit that in a sense fits in. It isn't a totally different thing. I think of some Oriental religions that emphasize the denial of life or the removal of life or achieving a state in which physical appetites and things are not not a force within your being, which are very different from a Christian understanding of creation and the world. And I don't know if those kinds of things make a difference. Somebody else probably could speak to that better. But I think the similarity you've made does exist, and there certainly has been an openness to Christianity among people of those kinds of beliefs.
What becomes of the person who, or group of people who are, if someone is ill and is a neighbor or a spirit chosen to accept the responsibility for that illness? And what becomes of that person?
The person who becomes ill?
The person who is named as responsible for the illness, or the spirit.
Yeah, if that is known, there certainly could and would be retaliation. Either physically or, you know, what would be the worst thing to happen would be banishment from the community. To be kicked out or moved out of the village or out of the circle of people would even be worse than killing the person. And that might happen. Or they might try to retaliate with other spiritual powers, and it could create tension within the...
Would they then say that, you said that, that God is just there, do they ever accept that God is influential in their life, but in a negative, would they feel to be a negative way?
They wouldn't. Certain instances like epidemics or something in which there's this vast overarching evil that seems to be prevalent. But the idea that Christianity brings of a God who seeks them out in love is unusual and an opening and something that's recognized with great joy, that here's this greatest spiritual power of all who's reaching out to us in love rather than we trying to appease always and come at peace with. And, yeah, Herman.
Attempt to find these potions and that sort of thing to recover those or make sure that they're not lost. That is a sort of a westernization of it. That is, they're seen as mechanistic adjustments in the human machine, sort of thing. It's taken kind of that's a Western model that's applied to those who recover them. But how are those same things, those potions or whatever, how are those perceived by the healers? Are they filled with good spirits of nature or so that counter the more negative spirits? Animated notion in their minds than the more mechanistic notion we have. Can you talk a little bit about the quality of those healing powers?
Yeah, I think that they would look at them as, if somebody were to take them and take them to a laboratory and go through them, they might find certain things. But the real power of them lies not only within the thing itself, but within the spiritual realities that surround it, that go with the person who administers them, the songs and the incantations that go with it, that it's all part of a communal reality and not just the mechanized thing itself. So there would be either spiritual realities connected with the thing, but more so with the way the thing is used within the community and within the application of it. It would never be that someone would just come and give medicine to someone quietly, and it's always together with music and drums and people often also with Christians as they practice healing in Africa. It's seldom a private thing, but more often done with music and prayers and the laying on of hands and various ceremonies and anointing of oil, as the New Testament says, and other ways that combine communal action with the desired gift. Yeah.
I am struck in that comment by the last time I was at Holden, they did a Vesper service on holistic living and holistic medicine. And I keep wondering if we're coming sort of full circle to what you're talking about again in that sense.
Yes. In fact, how are we to know that the rituals that go on in the hospital around the sick bed don't also have something to do with the healing process? And at least holistic authors talk a lot about the importance of faith in the doctor you go to and the relationship between them. Mm-hmm.
The touching of the patient
I have a question that sort of takes off from there. I really like their definition of help as reconciliation and wholeness, and that sounds to me very much like holistic medicine writings here as well. And thinking of a particular author who talks about health as reconciliation at three levels: with God, with other people, and with the environment, bringing it all together. And I was wondering whether holistic health as we talk about it now in the West, has come and combined in any way with what is there in Africa, is medicine, the Western medicine at all, being influenced from holistic health here as well as from the way in which it's seen there?
I think in many places now it is coming to that. I think very often at the beginning there became a sharp cleavage between the traditional ways and the modern ways, and just like there was in worship and other practices that of Africans that had to be put aside in order to become really Christian, to become really technological medicine, you had to give up all these other practices. And then increasingly in more recent times there's been more of a recognition that a lot of those things that we put down as pagan and as bad had a lot of merit to them, and now they're coming back, particularly in the efforts at community health and primary health care, where there's a blending of using the traditional ways and stories and trying to use what's there and then augment it to create in a preventative way more than curative. I think the curative is still very much in a separate kind of, it's either modern or traditional. There's some blending within the people as they come, but as it's practiced, it is. You'll find herbalists in a lot of towns and places where that's being done. But certainly in the preventative aspects, I think there's a more of a blending.